Kentucky on Republic Broadcasting Network, please go to republicbroadcasting.org. Smash the donate and fundage. Mail your check or money order payable to RBN 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas 78664. Call in your debit or credit card 1-800-727-2799 extension 3 and ask about the promos, shirts, business cards, and the like. Keep your speech alive, children and children. This is Tuesday Night Broadcast, the Patrick and Jeremy Show, and from the underground bunker in Burbank, weighing in well over 243.22 pounds, standing well over 6'4", Dr. Patrick Slattery, welcome to the show.
Hello. Dr. Slattery here, ready to heal whatever ails you.
A doctor of political science, am I right?
That's right, political science. International political economy, to be technical. Yeah. But, political science.
You bring a lot to the table. Let me just brag on you for a minute. I mean, and this is objective. I know we're friends and spent some time together in real life, but just objectively, so you got 10 years with David Duke as the co-host. You have extensive knowledge of politics and history. Credit. So, professor. And here's what I think you bring to the table. This is, I think, the most important thing. You were coming from a background of a traditional anti-war, Green Peace, and all the like. And after listening to Kevin MacDonald and reading Kevin MacDonald, the same conclusions that a lot of the rest of the people have in the white nationalist movement, the patriot movement of, Jewish power, white genocide, all of that. That's significant, because that means that these talking points, these truths, these narratives resonate with people from all backgrounds. And if you're honest with yourself and honest with everyone else, people are going to come to these conclusions that we've come to. Did I hit the nail on the head?
I would like to think so. I certainly would like to think so. If you're honest with yourself and you're exposed to, we like to call it the truth. I think it's information that can be verified. Hopefully you're going to come to more or less these same conclusions. And I hope so. And I think we are making a certain amount of progress.
Yeah. So, and by the way, we're having some Skype issues. Julie said we're sounding a little choppy. Are you hearing me okay, Patrick?
My Skype is stuck. I would really like to reconnect. Maybe we can reconnect one at a time.
I can hear you fine. I just reconnected. Julie, how am I coming through? Just send me a text. If you want to reconnect, Patrick, I'll filibuster for a while and get it.
Okay, I'll reconnect as promptly as possible.
Great. I'm gonna just set the show up. We'll cover tonight. So, we've got the China-Taiwan thing. Somebody got this thing on Trump considering a VP.
Oh, that is so much better.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, Julie, just send me a text if you can hear me okay. And if not, I'll reconnect to Patrick and Buster.
I hear you fine, Jeremy.
Yeah, we were just setting the show up. We're covering Governor Lee in Tennessee, his reaction to the Nashville shooting. I've got some stuff on the Kentucky shooting. We'll update that. And I guess I just want to start off by saying that, our republic really hasn't worked well. It hasn't worked like it's supposed to, probably since 1924. And I heard your show today, Patrick. You were kind of dissecting the 1924, was it called the Naturalization Act, Immigration Act?
Yeah, it was the Johnson something act.
And we're getting too many Eastern European immigrants cool with the anti-Semitic remarks, and it's destabilizing the U.S. and we need to get back to founding stock, you know, of the country. Halt immigration, and it was halted the 24-65. You know, 40 years it was halted. Didn't you say that? Was it Seller or Hart that was the opposition to that in 24? Were they still?
Oh no, it was Emanuel Seller, Jewish congressman from New York, and he was a young congressman in 1924 and put up really as stiff resistance as he could to the restrictive immigration bill of 1924, and then he was the main sponsor of the open the floodgates immigration bill of 1965. So he was in Congress for over 40 years.
Wow. That's an issue. I think congressmen having those long terms. I don't know what you think about term limiting congressmen, but I think that could be a thing. Of course, we're closing the barn door after the cows have like ran off into like six fields away.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think you mentioned, and you were getting this from Kevin McDonald's immigration section of Culture Critique, that the representatives actually felt pressure to do this Immigration Act of 24. So, I mean, that really, to my knowledge, and you correct me, is that's the last time our republic really was working correctly, because the people that are in power now and since 24 haven't really represented us well, especially since the 60s.
Yeah, that was democracy at work, you know, in 1924, I would say so. And since then, you have had, certainly you've had an erosion. I don't know if 1924 would be the, maybe that would be a very significant landmark, maybe a high point or... The end, maybe since then, the erosion. I mean, obviously, 24 is after 1913. 1913, you had the income tax, you had the Federal Reserve, and then a year later, you had entry into World. Well, I guess 4 years later, you had entry into World War One. But yeah, that if you wanted to say the last time it worked correctly, I mean, you could make that point. It was working correctly then. And when was, you know, there's certain things you could say that have probably been good legislation since then. It depends on your point of view. But yeah, in terms of demographics, that was maybe a last gasp or something.
Well, you know, we entered World War II. That did not have public support until they, you know, did Pearl Harbor. I say did Pearl Harbor. I didn't say plan, but I mean, you know, FDR sanctioned Japan. It was an act of war, and that Pearl Harbor was a retaliation. I think that most historians agree that FDR pretty much knew about Pearl Harbor before it happened. So it was allowed to happen. I don't know what's your take on that.
I think it's pretty clear that the Roosevelt administration knew that the attack was coming. And you can certainly make the case that the United States had provoked Japan unnecessarily. You had economic, what would you call them? Embargoes of Japan. So they had sanctioned Japan, economic sanctions against Japan. So they were not selling oil. They were not selling scrap metal, which was a big deal, and not selling soybeans, which was a big deal. I'm not sure how far back the soybeans went. I think the soybeans might have been gone back pretty far. Japan had set up a what's typically called a puppet state in Manchuria in the early 1930s, and the soybean sanction that might have already been in place at that point, because Manchuria is a big a source for soybeans. And when the oil was cut off, well, what did Japan do? Even before attacking Pearl Harbor, Japan attacked Indonesia, which is a source of oil. And so, yeah, the United, you know, people can have their opinions about Japan, and it's not as if, you know, Japan was had invaded China. But, you know, oddly enough, my CCP handler, Kato, when I asked him which side of the Chinese Civil War that he supported, whether it was the Nationalists or the Communists, he said neither. He supported the Japanese. there was a Chinese Nationalist who was fighting on the side of the Japanese. And, you know, there were Nationalists in India. A guy named, I believe his name was Sandra Bose, and he was an Indian Nationalist, and he was fighting on the side of the Japanese against the British in India. And there were Nationalists in the Philippines who were on the side of the Japanese against the Americans. In fact, you might not remember Salvador Laurel. He was the vice president of the Philippines under Corazon Aquino, who was the people power president after Marcos was overthrown in 1986, I believe. And Salvador Laurel's father had been the president of Philippines under Japanese occupation. So, you know, the Japanese, we are taught that they were just raping and pillaging Asia. And it's certainly fair to have complaints about the Japanese military and occupation in Asia. But yet there were a lot of Nationalists in a lot of countries who were on the side of the Japanese against the colonial powers, or in the case of China, against the Chiang Kai-shek or the communists. So you did have that. And part of the reason for provoking Japan seems to have been because they had a military alliance with Germany, and that the real object was to get the United States into a war with Germany, which was not something that most Americans would have been willing to go along with if we weren't attacked. Or what happened is, with a couple of days after Pearl Harbor, Hitler honored his military alliance with Japan and declared war on the United States, which allowed Roosevelt to reciprocate.
And so, yeah, the point is, he didn't have popular support to go into World War II, and that it took, you know, Pearl Harbor for the media, the Jewish dominated media, to ramp that up and get the Americans all riled. And that was even late in 42, right? Pearl Harbor was December of 42. So you're talking America's interest in the war.
It's December 41.
My bad. December 41. Coming into 42, America's entry into World War II, which turned the tide. You know, support for the America gave the Soviet Union and American troops on the ground in Europe, that turned the tide. And then you come to 1957. Well, you come to 57. Let me throw this at you, and you can filibuster on this while I reconnect. Forced integration. That did not. Filibuster on that for a minute. I'm going to reconnect and try to get this Skype thing.
Yeah. All right. We do have the Skype issue. Well, 57, I suppose, it was that the year that Eisenhower used federal troops to integrate Little Rock High School. I think that's what Jeremy's referring to. And, okay, so I received today, and I haven't been able to really ascertain the accuracy of it yet, the legitimacy of it, but what is supposed to be a public opinion survey, or an opinion survey, a poll that was taken of American military members of I guess, on the eve of World War II and their attitudes towards Jews and blacks and whatnot. So let me get to that. That'll just take a second. And
okay, back. Hopefully I'm not glitchy now. We have a good connection.
Yeah, so, well, this is what I got. So in 1940, the U.S. government began a study of U.S. officers and enlisted men's attitude towards Jews and blacks. In 1943, this would be in the middle of the war, 90% of Americans said they'd rather lose the war to the Nazis than end segregation. I want to see, you know, all polls, I want to see what's really the question and everything, but only 10% of enlisted men thought Jews should be allowed to enter the U.S. following the end of the war. And, of course, during the war and before the war, as Jews were being coerced out of Germany, they were not being welcome in a lot of countries. In the United States, there was a boat, I think it was called the St. Louis, that was turned away. It was tried to dock in the United States. It was turned away. 31% of enlisted men thought Hitler was partly right, partly wrong in his treatment of the Jews. 86% of enlisted men agreed with the statement, there is nothing good about the Jews. I'd really like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. I have a link to the poll. I'm just like, I'm not 100% sure of it, but, I'll just read it, take it with a grain of salt. 48% of enlisted men agreed that a Jew will always play you for a sucker. 61% of enlisted men agreed that you can tell a Jew by the way he looks. And you may, you know, probably could back then. And 51% of enlisted men agreed that Jews are the biggest gold bricks in the army. I don't know what a gold brick is. But anyway, that is from this 1940 survey of military attitudes, military personnel attitudes towards Jews.
Yeah, and I think just making our point that, you know, the government not represented the populace, at least since the mid-20th century, and we mentioned the 7 integration in Little Rock, then the 1965 Immigration Act, which I don't think the majority of the public wanted all of these people from the third world, you know, pushed it, sexual revolution. Oh, by the way, with the Jewish immigrants from Germany, you also had Stalin expelling, Jewish Trotskyite communists, and they're coming to America and infiltrating our institutes of higher learning and academia, Hollywood politics, and you name it. So you had that going on.
Yeah, you had a lot going on. And, of course, in the wake of World War II, the immediate wake of it, you had the so-called McCarthy era, you know, circa early 1950s. And it's not as if there was nothing to it. There were plenty of Communist Party members who were working in Hollywood, who were in the State Department and whatnot. And a big hunk of them were Jews.
Up on the break, and it went quite fast. We're back on the other side with some more analysis.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Show Patrick and Jeremy, we were just running out. So yeah, after 65 Immigration Act, flooding America, then you had springing up, plan. The FBI infiltrates them, doing the COINTELPRO thing, which culminated in 74 church trials, right?
The church hearings.
Church hearings didn't seem to do any good, though. Seemed to be just a show. And so, yeah, the overall point that we're making being like, this government has not represented us for a very, very long time. A conservative view. So that gets me to this article from the Gateway Pundit. So we're talking about the elections in 24.
And I just want to say, I think the church hearings did have an impact. It just didn't last forever. It lasted for a little while. And I think there was a, in the late 70s, I mean, it's not as if the CIA stopped doing covert operations. They were doing stuff. They were doing stuff in Afghanistan. But I think things got dialed back a bit for maybe 8, 10 years. That's my feeling.
Okay, fair enough. So maybe we could even point to 74 for a time when maybe properly represented that happens. Thing. So
yeah, like well, said, 74. We on- I mean, 74 was the year Nixon was forced to resign. And when you think about it, Nixon was forced to resign less than 2 years after he had just a massive landslide reelection. So. Yeah. There's that, but you know, as part of that whole the Nixon thing, and also the end of the Vietnam War, there was a lot of introspection, and it created a lot of opportunities. And Senator Church held these hearings, and it got a lot of information before the public.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Vietnam War itself, that. Talking Cold War language, and we got to fight them over there before we have to fight them over here. But it really got bad in the 70s.
Yeah, and you know, I'm having a fair amount of difficulty hearing you. I don't know if calling in on the telephone line as opposed to the Skype, that might be better. I'm not sure.
I might have to do that. You could, Julie, if you could try muting.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it helps when Mike mutes. When Mike mutes his mic, but I don't know if that's the issue today.
Let me try calling in. We'll see how that goes.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. All right. Well,
hey, take us into this article from the Gateway Pundit.
Okay. This is an interesting article from the Gateway Pundit, which is Boomer. It's MAGA Inc. It's Boomer stuff, Boomer Trump stuff. But still, so Joe Hoft, who. Is he the founder, or is he the founder's identical twin? I'm not sure. The founder of the Gateway Pundit is some gay guy, but he interviewed Roger Stone, and in the course of the interview, Roger Stone noted that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has announced he's running for president as a Democrat. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is interesting. He's mostly known because of his opposition to vaccines, his long-standing opposition to vaccines. It goes way back before the COVID, so-called COVID pandemic. And he's of the opinion that that vaccines are linked to autism and other childhood problems. And so he's got a long history of that. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he looks like a Kennedy. He doesn't really sound like a Kennedy because he's got some sort of problem with his voice box. His voice box doesn't work right, and so he can't project his voice. But otherwise, I saw him speak at an anti-COVID lockdown rally in Washington, D.C. early last year. And once you got over his voice issue, he was an excellent speaker. He was very charismatic, you know, and he was there, and he looked like a Kennedy, you know, to some people, to boomers and some old-fashioned Democrats, that means something. And I'm not sure what all his other policies are. Roger Stone described him as actually having an America First foreign policy, which would be big if it's true. Are we coming up on the break? I think we are.
On the break, back on the other side.
I can feel the thunderstorms inside.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To read more about this amazing breakthrough and to order your terahertz frequency wand, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
In times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With a Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. A beautiful addition to your home, the Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream, or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about is what's for dinner.
Okay, so if you guys can hear me, we're coming back from the break. There we go. Hopefully you can hear me now on the phone with Patrick and Jeremy show. Connection issues and everything. So what's the gist of the article, Patrick? Are they saying that Robert Kennedy would be a good VP then for Trump?
Yes, that is exactly what Roger Stone is saying. So I guess Ron DeSantis might be somebody that in public opinion polls, Trump supporters might say, oh, he'd be a good vice president. But he was kind of snarky regarding this whole Trump indictment, where he was saying, well, Ron DeSantis said, well, I wouldn't know what's involved in paying hush money to a porn star, which I don't know. Like, I guess he thought he was being cute, but it didn't go over well. And then right. Trump is thought to like this Carrie Lake lady who ran for governor and was cheated out of the governor's election in Arizona. But, you know, who else is there? And what Roger Stone was saying is if Robert F. Kennedy Jr. gets any traction in the Democratic primaries, if he gets traction, the Democrats will ramp up the cheating, because Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is not what the Democrats want anymore. The Democratic Party of the Kennedys is long gone. They don't want him.
Right.
But if he gets any traction,
there's no chance of him becoming the Democrat nominee, is what you're saying, basically.
Right, right. But he could, become a bit of a folk hero or something, and then Trump could offer a unity ticket. Oh, well, you know, we're reaching out to Democrats with a old-fashioned Democrat who actually shares the American First foreign policy and a few other things. And, you know, that's what Roger Stone was saying. Watch out for this. And, you know, regardless of whether you're talking about him being Trump's running mate or just making some sort of impact, election campaigns, and whether, you know, regardless of how rigged the election might wind up being, the campaign is going to be real. It'll have an aspect of reality towards it. And these campaigns, lots of issues come out in campaigns. the whole immigration, that we can do something to stop immigration. That came out of Trump's 2016 campaign. There was no talk of this kind of stuff in 2015 before Trump came down the escalator with his lovely wife Melania and said that Mexicans are murderers and rapists, and presumably some of them are good people. There was no talk.
Well, so, that plus good relations with Russia, that was something that came out in the campaign. Also, you know, anti-war, get out of the Middle East, you know, Iraq war being fake and gay. Bush lied, people died. I mean, that all came out, too. It definitely woke the populace up into talking about things that they never would have talked about had we just had a Jeb Bush or a little Marco. You know? So I see that. I have 2 points of contention, and I think we might be a little bit at odds on this, but let's just hash it out. So number one, let's just say that Trump gets Robert Kennedy as VP and we get the perfect ticket, or whoever. We still have 8 states doing mail-in ballots, so I don't know that we'll have a fair election. And you're pointing out that even if we have a rigged election, that the campaign could be a lot of good. I see that point. But for, you know, for going forward, you know, we're hell and gone from 2016, and I don't think we're going to have a fair election for president. And so there's that. But then, two, even if Trump and Robert Kennedy get in, and let's assume that they're both going to do what they say they're going to do, they're just going to be blocked at every point. And under Trump, and here's a third thing, and I'm going to kick it back to you to push back or whatever. So under Trump, let's suppose in 2016, let's pretend that Trump did everything that he said he was going to do. Build the wall, deport some illegals, stop foreign wars, good relations with Russia. All these things are great. But that would basically just set us back to 1980, and we would still have white genocide, but we would have it at a much slower level, like the frog slowly boiling in the pot and the heat gradually turning up. It would basically be the Steinway plan. And I've mentioned the plan. I know you don't like the word plan. But, I mean, Trump's immigration policies perfectly matched Steinway. And, you know, you notice he had Stephen Miller on board. Miller went to Duke with Richard Spencer. Miller did anti-immigration protests with Spencer at Duke. You know, there is a sliver of Jewish power that wants to slow immigration down to a trickle to be able to brainwash the new immigrants into Israel-first policies and American nationalism, civic nationalism. So, I mean, even if Trump did do everything that he said, we would still be in the situation of a slow white genocide and people not being woke up as fast. I'm sort of just throwing some stuff out there. Let me kick it to you to respond.
Yeah, I'm not saying people should be excited at the prospect of electing a Trump-Kennedy ticket. What I am saying is it's interesting to get issues discussed. And, you know, Trump got immigration discussed big time. Robert F. Kennedy, his main issue over the past decade has been vaccines. And, of course, the vaccines, you know, there's vaccines in general, but then there's also specifically the COVID vaccines, which are, as you know, our RBN community has a pretty, if there's one thing that we agree on, is those vaccines are messed up, right? That's one thing that I think everybody agrees on, all the hosts and all the callers, that the vaccines are messed up. I don't know if there's anybody in the RBN community who's pro-vaccine or the COVID vaccines. So it would be interesting, and it's not so. And your points are well taken. A, that the elections are corrupt, and so it may well be unrealistic to expect anybody that we support to actually get elected. And then B, we have the experience with Trump having been elected on a pretty good platform, and wind up being very ineffectual at getting any of that platform put in place. And those are very, you know, both points are very valid and well taken. When I'm looking at the campaign, it's not just in terms of an election that is going to put in place people who are going to carry out policies. It's about, like, to me, politics is more than just elections. Politics is the competition for power and narrative and all of this stuff that is carried on in society, not just in the ballot booth, but in the media, in people's homes and in their immediate communities. And so everything matters. Everything matters. And I the presidential campaigns have historically been vehicles for all sorts of things, for all sorts of policy initiatives. And I can remember, for instance, 1968, where Robert F. Kennedy Sr., he and Eugene McCarthy had run in the Democratic primaries against Lyndon Johnson. Well, Johnson had already dropped out by the time Kennedy dropped in, but neither Kennedy nor McCarthy won the election, but having had a anti-Vietnam War candidacies, it really helped turn the American public opinion against the wars, against that war, and I think that hastened the end of that war. It still took a while, but I think it hastened it. And one last thing, a lot of people will point out, and Ralph Nader always pointed this out, that if you look at third parties, right, because he was third party, he never expected he was going to win the presidency, but he ran four times. And he was always pointing out that these third party candidacies, if you go back historically, they introduce all sorts of issues that wind up eventually getting taken up by major parties and becoming law. Like the Little Liberty Party in the 1840s, it was an anti-slavery party. There, you can look at all sorts of things: the 40-hour work week, all sorts of things that originated in third party movements. So election campaigns are good vehicles for pushing issues and pushing narratives.
And you're bringing up good points to the point of politics not just being about elections or winning. We had Warren Baylog on a few months ago from the National Justice Party, and they're doing a lot of real good work, political activism and winning over the populace. And they're not a party that's probably going to be relevant for a little while, but they're putting in the legwork and the groundwork on changing populist opinion. So that's a good point. I want to, if we can, and we may have to skip the break, Julie, if you will graciously allow us, I want to get to this clip from William from Montana, the late William. William and I were discussing the events of January 6th and the whole debacle there. And just to set that up, one of the reasons we supported Trump in 2020, even though I got off the Trump train there for a few years, we knew that what was coming was really bad and the system was about to crash down on us, on regular American patriots, white nationalists, anybody that spoke truth to power. And that indeed happened. But the day of January 6th, I think, proved to us that the system is very powerful. And they have plans. They have plans A, Bs, and Cs. And they can stop things in their tracks and set up things for the future. I don't know, Patrick, do you have a little bit? I don't know if you looked at the clip or not, but it's about a five-minute clip, if we could play it. Before we do. So this is William and I on January 6th. Patrick, you were traveling or something. I don't remember what was going on because you were in attendance there. This is William and I's visceral react on January 6th, and we're really clipping William from Montana. And if you have that, Julie, let's set that up, and that'll take us right up to the next break.
...to be an amazing success. And then I started hearing all of these things that happened at the Capitol, and it was so so out of sync with the way the day was going and the expression of what the day was all about, that the first thing I kept saying to myself, this is an absolute plan psychop. And one of the things that you do in a psychop, when you sent me that picture of the bull standing, I believe that's actually the that's the desk of the chairman of the House. And that image, one of the things that a psychop does is it tries to put bizarre images in your face that you cannot possibly, you know, understand. And that way it stops you, because one of the things about a psychop, if you actually go in and look at some of the stuff, you know, on psychops, you will find that one of the things that you want to do in a certain type of tactical psychop is you want to try to sow not only dissension among the people, you want to also sow questions about how wise the leaders were for getting you in a situation which has gone completely south. And the reason for that is you want to basically stall people from being able to make accurate decisions about what happened and what they should do next. Because in that confusion, in that discordant, you know, inability to make sense out of things, you gain a strategic advantage by just putting their mind and their ability to make decisions about what to do and where to go. You put that all in confusion, and that buys you time. And if you've planned this from the beginning, you can take advantage of that discoordination, misinformation, and a disheartened spirit, you know. And I think that that is something that we really need to basically take a step back and not be drawn into this and say, well, it's on you now. You have to make sense out of what didn't happen and what did happen while we are doing an end run. You know, they are already calling, you know, Biden is already calling, you know, for that this, you know, we have to basically impeach Trump, get him out of the White House, arrest him, maybe for sedition, and any Republicans that back him need to be denounced and eliminated too. And there has been a rush of Republicans to denounce this violence. And one of the things that I was listening to NPR again, you know, you have to give me credit. I mean, I would do that for you all. I listened to NPR, and they were calling the shots on how Trump had gone completely crazy. His people came there to disrupt Congress, to keep for a peaceful transfer of power, and that this, you know, had to be suppressed, and we have to take arm. We have to make, you know, a big push to basically keep these people from ever doing this again, which will be, you know, the same thing, you know, with travel bans, roadblocks, searches, and, you know, this whole thing turned south at the end, and it was so well planned, it sort of made my head spin, you know, like, now what? But I just stepped back and I said, we've got to basically take, you know, we have to take a setback, so that we can evaluate this on our terms. We need to choose the battles that we engage ourselves in. We can't be forced into a battle that we didn't see coming. I mean, as you have said many times, I mean, we all had inclinations that, my God, is this going to be another Charlottesville? Is this going to be something that where we, you know, are outfoxed because we have the media against us, we have the tech companies against us, and we even have the local, you know, law enforcement against us. I mean, I saw one Trump supporter saying, hey, you know, yelling at the Capitol Police, you know, we had your back. You know, we had your back. You know, did they have your back? No. We had your back, but we don't have your back anymore because of how you are clamping down on us, and we're not doing any violence, but you're clamping down on us and trying to tell us that we are not here, allowed to be here. So, I mean, that's basically my take. I'm gonna take you know, some time off tonight. I may even actually have some alcohol tonight. You know, you're a good influence. I'm thinking of maybe having some sake tonight.
So, William, that was our visceral react on January 6th, 2021. That was my clip from my broadcast. And William called it, I mean, in retrospect, we can see it now, but that he called it at the time, it was a psyop. It was something where you had legitimate protesters at the Capitol and, you know, federal interference that disrupted the whole thing. Where, as you pointed out, Patrick, they should have protested, you know, to every state. And it should have been drawn out, and there's a constitutional avenue to solve that. But that was all disrupted by the January 6th thing. And we specifically mentioned the QAnon bull shaman, Shaman, whatever. And you know, this guy was at other protests playing other parts. I mean, maybe he was, you know, part of the PSYOP, I don't know. But it definitely... the January 6, 2021 changed American politics forever. I mean, that was a turning point, just like Charlottesville was. And so I think that they're building a political infrastructure where that can never happen again, and we can never get anyone in again that resembles Trump. So let me kick it to you and get your comments on that clip and on our way forward.
Well, I mean, first of all, that was William on January 6th, just hours after these things had transpired. And it really stands the test of time, doesn't it? That there's nothing he said that I would take exception to. Now, I had been there. I didn't go inside the Capitol, obviously. I was broadcasting early in the morning. I was on Dr. Duke's show. I was on Stormfront Radio, and I was on some other show. I don't know who it was, but I had gone there with one of my former panel mates from Mark Collett's show, No White Guilt, and I was on a podcast with him too. So we had done three in the AM hours in the vicinity of the White House, and President Trump for part of that time was making a speech. And President Trump's speech, there was nothing wrong with that speech. It was very calm. And then as we walked from the White House, the 16 blocks down Pennsylvania Avenue to the Capitol, I had brought with me a transistor radio. And I was able to listen to President Trump's speech as we walked, you know, after we're out of earshot of the loudspeakers, I could continue to hear him to the end of his speech. So I heard the whole speech, and most of it was just reeling off facts and figures and things like that. And then we got there, and here's the thing. So there was what you coined the Slattery plan, which was objecting to every state. And I don't know if that was going to happen. They did not object to the first two states, but they did object to the third state alphabetically. That's Arizona. And it may have been that they were only going to object to three states or six states, which would have just been a futile gesture. Peter Navarro has stated that no, actually they were going to object to every state. Peter Navarro was Trump's economic advisor or his trade advisor. And, Professor, what's the guy's name? Something, John Yoo at Berkeley, who used to be in the Bush administration as a assistant attorney general or something. And he had also proposed the same strategy. So that strategy was out there. It wasn't just, I wasn't the only person who had thought of it. That strategy was out there. And whether the Republican senators were planning to go forward with it or not, it represented a threat to the Democrats and the establishment, the Democrats, to the Jewish establishment, because it was something that could have been done. Whether or not it was going to be done, it could have been done, and it was a possibility, and they had to protect themselves from it. And thus, this giant psyop setup that William was talking about. I think it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And that just, so it seems like they've set in concrete, one, mail-in ballots from 8 states still. And I know a lot of states have done election reform, and that's great. But then, two, any protest to an election, there's a precedent set. And they can always go back to January 6th. And they can just have whatever, a justification that they want to have of cracking down on these protests. And then I think that's how it turned American politics, forever, basically. And so I think all the things are well taken.
There are a lot of these turning points, or a lot of places where things happened as emergency measures and we never went back. So with COVID, and not just the way we vote, but COVID, they no longer do general shareholders meetings in person. Now all the general shareholder meetings for corporations are they're virtual. And I remember just before, in 2019, Patrick Little and I were talking about a plan where he could go and have some shenanigans and hijinks at these meetings.
We'll have to continue on Patrick and Jeremy Part 2, National Bugle, 1 p.m. Central on RBN. Be there or be a big flaming homo tranny queer.
Will conclusively prove George Soros' role in orchestrating the plandemic. But first, dear patriots, the truth train has brought us a conspiracy in our own backyard. Now, you may think you know the story.
Now, it's like I always say, there's a whole lot of bullshit out there. So I'd like to give Soros, Pelosi, the Zionists, the Mexican, the snowflakes,
stay strong, truth tellers. Stay strong. Stay strong. And we'll rock till the break of dawn. This feels like heaven. Just you and me.
This feels like heaven. You're listening to RBN, in defense of the Republic.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.